A good example of the participation of churches today is the Friends Committee on National Legislation. It's a very small group in Washington, D.C. that listens to what Indian people want and then does it. And I would like to suggest that it's time for all the churches to examine what their roles are, what their functions are, what their responsibilities are, and that they need to be more responsive and responsible in their actions in this area of social action and political activity.
Thank you. Russell, Jim?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I too would like to express the gratitude with the eloquence of which Mr. Katztag brought forth in regard to the importance and the very crux of this whole forum is the culture of the people. And I keep hearing these overtones that continues to confirm that perhaps the first treaty did have at the bottom, or 90 days, whichever comes first. And of course, again, this term of consultation and concurrence that is supposed to be practiced by the Bureau of Indian Affairs, as far as I know, has never truly come about. And that follows in more than one category. I appreciate the insight of Daley Sambo. And from a layman's point of view, I would hope that the concerns that she has brought out as a paralegal can somehow be worked out, and those, perhaps, that watch these proceedings through TV or hear about them in the paper, perhaps consider them comical, if not absurd, in the requests of the indigenous people. For instance, the full return of turn back of the jurisdictional rights to the Aborigines. But I think it must be constantly hammered into the federal government to constantly remind them that they were not put here to dominate the Aborigines, but to assist them. But again, I refer back to the constant misapplication of the term trust responsibility. It seems that I have this opinion. I have this opinion that I hope it's not I hope it isn't final. But I have a conscience, and the majority of my people, and as I have been taught by my elders, we have a conscience. And there is this other great land that you go to when you leave this earth. And to carry that conscience with you at all times. And it would make you a better man and appreciate your fellow man's property and his rights. But as I observe the actions of many mainstream people, they seem to get their conscience and put it in a corner for many years. And when through their lives they realize there is a gate and there is things that I have to do on this earth in order for me to get through that gate, perhaps. And so in the latter days of their lives, they get the conscience back to them and do something in regard to perhaps a minority. Take, for instance, with the exception of the present chairman at this forum, the judges of the Supreme Court or the federal judges in the particular regions, Judge Bolt. In the latter days of his life, he made a major decision in favor of the indigenous people of the Pacific Northwest. But as the law is applied and the appeal process can be put into effect, the judge either gets sick or dies or both or resigns and practically puts the indigenous people back into square one again. Perhaps this is the feeling of Mr. Trudeau. As Mr. Lerner has said, his actions come after the time when he said, I am going to resign. But enough cannot be said. And I hope, and as I state as a layman, to this body, the importance of understanding that there are no Thriftway, A&P, Safeway stores out here in these villages. There are these stores all around the Yakima Reservation, and yet the Yakimas choose to gather a large portion of their foods off the land, naturally. And I leave you with perhaps with this comment, and I think it is well put, in regard to cultures by an Irish author by the name of Peter Farb. In his book, Man's Rise to Civilization, and he noted the contributions by individuals, organizations, monetarily for the protection or the extinction, against the extinction of certain birds and animals, the passenger pigeon, etc. He says, but when Ishi, the last Yahi Indian to ever roam the face of the earth, and died in the Museum of Anthropology in San Francisco, not one dime was raised for the preservation of Yahi or his culture. No different than the tools and the weapons that abound in the museums across the nations are never analyzed, and the people that made them are never understood. Tried to be understood. And I think the way he analyzed the situation in regard to culture was, if I can remember it, man is quick to prevent cruelty to animals and sometimes even to humans. But there is no counterpart to the Humane Society or the Sierra Club for the prevention and cruelty to entire cultures. And I think this is, I'm sure many in this body realize this. But here is a white man, an Irishman, with such great insight and can put into this black and white English words such a profound statement, just as Mr. Shellen Katchtag has. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. I wonder if it's all right with you if we might take a 5-minute break for a cup of coffee, and I'll confer with David Case about the rest of the program. Is that all right? We'll just take a break.
Like this in other way. sit down again. Okay, how about it? Well, ladies and gentlemen, let's take our seats.
Oh, Ralph,
you need a gavel.
Good. Okay, and David and Chad, which had occurred to me, I might say.
Sure.
But while you're here, and Dave's here, we might chat about it.
Ladies and gentlemen, I thought we might carry on for a few minutes and then go to lunch, and then come back after lunch and carry on for perhaps an hour or so, or as long as we feel it appropriate to do so, and then we'll wind up after that. I think that I would like now to ask Alfred Starr if he wishes to speak. Mr. Starr has been very patient with us, and we were delighted to have him with us throughout all of last week when he did make a contribution that was much appreciated. And Mr. Starr, if you'd like to proceed now, please do, sir.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I heard so much about the Indian laws, and I'm thankful that the people that study the Indian laws from way back is talking to us here. I'm going to talk a little about the interior of Alaska, when we first heard about the Indian villages or where they live or native allotments. So it wasn't until 1915 that the Secretary of Interior came into the interior of Alaska. They was going to build a railroad. And it wasn't till about 1904 that the missionaries came. And what quickly happened in a lot of places was that when the missionaries came, they came into villages, or they moved villages and tell the Indians to come, we're going to build a church here. Then they took the land. And very often, quite a lot of it, since then, up to about 1968, when the first congressional had a hearing up here on Indian lands and land claims, up the Tanana River around Nenana, especially around Tanana today, they told the Tanana Indians where I was born, that's on the Yukon, I usually look at the Alaskan map. It's they had a village down below Tarana. And the missionaries came there. I was born 1898. I guess they learned from the white man how to build up cabins at one time or another, and they had a good place called Tarana, good. The missionaries said, this is not going to be a town. They want to establish a military post up where the Tarana River and Yukon River comes together. That's about 30 miles upriver. And we want you to move up there because we're gonna build a church there. We'll have a church for you. So they said, the Indians said, that's a kind of a windy place. This is a good place. There's no wind, not too much wind and things like that. We like to live here. No, you be away from where there's going to be military post, where there could be work and things like that. So they move up there, they left their village, and they move up there and they build cabins. They start a village. And the missionaries took all the land around there. And they were not on their land at the village. That's what I was so worried about lately. That the Indians in the interior of Alaska, all over Alaska as far as I go, wherever their villages is, that they should own the land. Today they're selling that land, or they were trying to sell it, and the people of Tarana, the Indians, said that that's our village. We didn't tell the missionaries to take land around it. And up Tarana River, around 1968, after 1968, finally, when did we start to have a meeting style there? After I worked so many years to get that started, that the natives up the Tarana River, around Tarana Cross, the different villages up there had the same problem. They always had villages there, the missionaries came, and they took the land around it. So when they were going to build a highway, they said, sir, you have to move your cabin. We're going to build a highway. Then they said they moved their old cabin and put it together again. Then 3-4 years later, there's something else going to be built. You got to move again. Keep moving there. Many years that I talked through the University of with the people from the University of Alaska, we didn't ask for no compensation, but we did talk about land, that we should have land to live on. Alaska was covered with trails used by Indians, just like the Lower 48. And just like the Lower 48 from the eastern part, when they started to come west, that was all in the trails that was taken up. And all good land was have to be taken by settlers. That's why I was glad that they started this review commission. We American Indians, South American Indians, the whole North American Indians, left here not too long ago before they were seen a white man came from Europe. And we had rules about our villages, our hunting grounds. I talked about that before in the earlier part. In each tribe, according to the population, because of the game, the plants, roots, and different things they had to pick, fish, have a certain amount of land. And the Indians always talk about that, so that their people will live. And we couldn't have one whole, one tribe of Alaska. We got to have it all different places, including the land around the coast of Alaska, the Bering Sea in the northern part. They themselves have to have different villages on account of the amount of sea animals that they live on, and the furs, and the caribou, winter and another day, got their clothes. They make their clothes off. And it's a funny listen to you people that study the Indian land and Indian laws, that most of the laws about the Indian land or Indian was made during the colonial times. Today, when we got mostly overpopulation all over the world, and the people will have to move greatly to different parts of the world, that original people up here, what their loss wasn't asked, but the white man's loss was put into it. The village today, the villages today of interior Alaska haven't got too many at the present time, too many white people among them. Some villages maybe will have one missionary, one school teacher, that's about all. Some have little more. So I'm glad that the young people up here is talking about the village rules, about their land. They gotta have that. And they also will have to have the land that they were given if it's not taxed. Just for tax, like I said the other day, if they start a mine or find oil or something, that's a mission money. It could be taxed. But if it's not making any money, there's nothing that on it but to hunt and live off the game one thing or another way, it shouldn't be taxed. And that's another thing like 1991 that I heard so much about. That it sounds like now, which we talk about in 1971, before 1971, that it shouldn't be taxed unless we do something on it, cut timber or mines or something, or some oil found on that land. It's the only way that should be taxed. Those should be taxed. Not all the whole 44 million acres, but how much land that oil or that whatever mine or whatever they could start on those land. Not too many years ago, about 1970, after 1971, the Korean government got in touch with a village corporation at Nana, the Doyle Corporation too, the regional corporations, the village corporations, that they like to have a timber, and they could start barge lines on the Yukon River to transport the logs and the timber products from the Yukon River down to the Bering Sea. It could come on, transfer to the ocean ships to take it back to Korea. And you have to ask the state, I guess, and the federal government to get permission to do all those things. And the corporations haven't got the power unless they got the permission from the... There is not much else in the interior of Alaska at the present about industries, anything, but things like that should be looked into. And when you talk about, you study the Indian laws, you should represent, you should tell Washington or the state government about those things. I got a Tinder Times last night. I finally found it. I was asking, so finally it was going downstairs, and I went there at the noontime. But on it, it said that the state and the state government and their rule, wherever they spent money, like the game commission, would have to hire certain amount of natives, some percentage of natives. And the legislators also told me that they introduced a bill which they think it will pass, that the villages that's got no white pupils in, a lot of villages got no white children, but the still, the people from outside are the white people who runs the schools, or teach the schools, that they go to start a loans so that the native, mostly the lady, the women's, young women's, young ladies, that had education will get money so that they could go to college to learn how to teach, so they could teach their villages. They could run those, be teachers. Things like that. And again, this gentleman from Yakima, Miss Russell, only one on this, she went someplace. If you still got problems in the States, and you're talking yesterday about the 1890s or before that, the laws about the reservations. Up here in Alaska, like I said, it wasn't until a few years ago. We didn't have no schools till about 1910 in interior Alaska. And we didn't have no hospitals. And we didn't know what what the game laws was. We didn't have no game laws. And we didn't have no food stamps or welfare, whatever you call it, which is there's so much of the white people say they didn't hand out from the government. It's new to us up here. We didn't ask for it. The American Indians always did work for his living. He had to. He didn't have the matches. He used the flint. He made needles out of different things to sew their clothes on. And they work hard for their livings, but they like to work. And if the Europeans come up here, so-called white races, what I wouldn't see, white races, I think all human beings on this earth is one people. I'm with a Martin Luther King. You came to different people altogether. I often thought about it, that if some other races or some other people, if maybe from planet, I'm just talking, you know, on some planet, would come to New York or Washington, D.C., or Ottawa, wherever, Mr. Berger, to Canada, you know, beautiful country. I've been in the country part of it. And I would say that we have a different language. We're going to take over your country. But you think quite a bit about losing your homes. That's what the American Indians happened to American Indians. So I'm going to quit talking to you. But I'm going to quote Will Rogers. He said that he was proud that his ancestors, that the people that came off Mayflower way out of Plymouth Rock when they first came to America, English, I'd say that include Alaska, that we're proud that you came. And we can't help but live with you for a long time to come. So I'm glad that you're talking about this, about the review commission, about what, about the natives, the Indians, should be that the rest of the people, the parts where we should get together ourselves, maybe furnish little funds to help run things like that, so that the governments of each country could hear about the people that he took their land away from. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Starr. I think you've given us all food for thought from experience that goes back longer than that of any of us by a long shot. Mr. Ketchatag.
Yes, first of all, Mr. Commissioner, I would like to thank you for showing the respect for an elder in our presence by allowing him to speak. Second of all, I have seen it written, and I believe that it is true that all honest men belong to one tribe. And that is one of the bases why we as Native people are now in the position that we are, fighting from a defensive. In relating with